Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower here till 2 a.m. tonight. And a full show tomorrow, 6 to midnight. We got a whole bunch of great guests for tomorrow night, including Jeff Tuckman, who will stop by. And Richard Larmer is going to join us. Mick Dumke from the Chicago Reader is going to join us. We'll have the drinking and writing guys in to talk about the craft beer week. All kinds of great stuff happening tomorrow. And Jeff Ruby will preview the brand new Chicago Magazine. A lot of really cool guests. Full show. Going to keep you entertained all evening long tomorrow. So make sure you stay tuned for that. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Call us up. If you have a movie question or a movie comment, we're going to cover all the movies right now, as we do every Friday night at midnight. The familiar themes of the Midnight Movie Review segment every Friday night at midnight right here on the Nick DiGilio Show on WGN. Help you plan your weekend, tell you all about the movies that are in theaters, tell you all about the movies that are available on demand. Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com always join me. Colin, how are you?
Good. How are you?
And here's Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All righty then. Well, we always start with the on-demand stuff. But before we start with the on-demand stuff, I want to ask you guys if you've seen the have either of you seen the full trailer for Pacific Rim?
Not the new one.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I've only seen the teaser.
Oh my god! I it's gonna rule. I think it's gonna be great. The trailer is pretty unbelievable.
Hmm.
So, and I mean, hey, listen, I'm a giant monster loving movie. I like the giant monsters. And the robots here in the movie are not like Transformer robots. And Guillermo del Toro is a much better director than Michael Bay. So, you know, giant robots beating the hell out of sea monsters sounds fantastic to me. So it's a great trailer, by the way. All right. So let's get to the on-demand stuff here. And let's start with what you know about, Eric. What do you know about 33 Postcards? These are all available on demand, by the way.
Yeah, 33 Postcards is a film starring Guy Pearce as a guy that's been sponsoring a little sort of an Asian girl, sort of like, you know, help a girl in need, you know, help a child in need kind of thing, and has been her pen pal for many years. The girl becomes a teenager. She's part of a singing group for her school, and they take a road trip to Australia. So she decides she's going to, you know, find her pen pal, and turns out Guy Pearce is actually in jail, and he's been writing her from jail, and doesn't really want the responsibility of being sort of a surrogate father to her. So yeah.
Okay. And but now I'm looking at this at the IMDb. It seems to have played some festivals. Did it play any fests that you were at?
No, it didn't play anything that I was at.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So 33 Postcards with Guy Pearce, that's available on demand. All right. What do we know about the English Teacher?
The English Teacher is a really good cast. It's got Julianne Moore and Greg Kinnear and Lily Collins, Nathan Lane. Here it says an English teacher's life is disrupted when a former student returns to her small town after failing as a playwright in New York.
Mm.
There you go.
It's a great cast, though.
Very good cast.
Hey, Jim Brewer's in it, and he plays.
Go.
He plays.
Well, there you go.
He plays Narcissist Man.
Okay.
So I don't know. That's the English Teacher, Julianne Moore. Great. Great cast from the director of some. Let's see. He's directed a couple episodes of New Girl. Episode of Shameless. He directs some episodes of Parks and Rec as well.
A lot of TV stuff.
So.
But good TV.
Yeah, actually, yeah, very good TV. He goes all the way back to Larry Sanders. He directed some Larry Sanders episodes.
And he directed an episode of Wonderfalls.
Wow. Okay. Well, good for him. Maybe this will
there
be kind of a fun movie to watch.
Maybe.
Okay. Tell me about The Guillotines.
The Guillotines, an elite crime-fighting unit in the court of the Chinese emperor relies on flying swords to defeat their enemies.
Uh-huh.
Because what else are you going to rely on?
Right.
Yeah. So, there you go.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's The Guillotines.
Yeah. Asian film, not a cast. I'm looking at the cast. I don't really recognize any of these names.
They have. I guess they haven't crossed over to America.
Right. Right.
Is my guess. But yeah, so that's out there. It's rated R for strong violent content. So it's a martial arts movie. Any martial arts movie with the word guillotine automatically gets a pass for me.
Sure.
Because of Master of the Flying Guillotine, which is one
of
the greatest movies ever made.
That's right.
So that's available on demand, and evidently it's going to be hitting theaters here in Chicago on June 14th.
Mm-hmm.
June 14th. Okay, what is Java Heat?
Java Heat apparently has nothing to do with coffee. a Muslim detective teams with an American posing as a graduate student to find the man behind a series of deadly terrorist bombings in Indonesia. And if you see the poster, apparently the guy tracking him down is Kellen Lutz.
Uh-huh.
Again, the cousin of the guy from 30 Rock.
Yeah.
The bad guy looks like it's Mickey Rourke.
Mickey.
Yeah. Mickey's in that realm right now. So.
Oh, man. Remember how great end of 2008, beginning of 2009 was for Mickey?
What happened at the end of... That was Wrestler, right?
Yeah.
That was Wrestler, yeah.
That was Wrestler, and then Mickey, the future was so bright, he got the Iron Man 2 villain, and now he's in Java Heat.
Java Heat.
Which was on demand. Okay.
Yeah.
What is paella?
I don't know, paella or a pieta. I'm not
pieta?
Sure how it's pronounced.
Okay.
But it's the latest film from Kim Ki-duk, who directed the film Mother.
Yep.
Yeah, and this is what I'm hearing about it. I've heard a lot of really solid things about this movie. I hear it's incredibly disturbing. And it's a film about a loan shark is forced to reconsider his violent lifestyle after the arrival of a mysterious woman claiming to be his long-lost mother.
Mm. Well, this guy's got some issues.
He's got a theme going.
Yeah, he's got some issues.
Apparently. Apparently.
It's
and I hear the loan shark apparently is the kind of thing where if you don't pay up, he severs your limbs and stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, and
by the way, that's...
The mother might be even worse than he is.
Nice. Pieta, which is now playing, it's also on demand, but it's now playing at Facets.
Oh, yes, it is.
Seven and 9 o'clock are the showtimes for Pieta, if you're interested in seeing that. Mother, I'm a big fan of Mother, so I enjoyed that movie very much. All right, well, now you've seen a couple of these other ones.
I have.
Okay, so tell me about American Mary.
Okay, American Mary, it stars Catherine Isabel, who was at... A flashback weekend a few years ago. She was a star of Ginger Snaps.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and she plays a medical student who's hard to really pay for medical school and whatnot. And she ends up attracting the attention of a mobster needs a doctor to perform those surgeries that need doing when you can't take one of your bad guys to the doctor.
Yeah, hey, we had an entire Fox TV series based on that concept.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Well, this one's a little bit different because after she performs the surgery for the mobster, she attracts people who really want some really freakish. plastic surgery.
Okay.
So she begins an underground plastic surgery business with people who want to look like living dolls. They want to have their breasts augmented in very odd ways. Very, very odd film. But a film that I really kind of liked. It reminded me a lot of May in a way. The tone of it. It's very, very odd in tone. Has violence, but is not so over the top. It's not just all about how freakish it can be, which a lot of films of this type, I think, would be. I actually really enjoyed this film.
Yeah, it looks great.
Mm-hmm.
American Mary, and it's got Clive Barker on the poster saying, "Amazing, extraordinary, Catherine Isabel is awesome."
Yeah.
Chris Alexander from Fangoria says, "Bizarre, bloody, and beautiful, a modern horror masterpiece."
Mm-hmm.
And it won 5 awards, including Best Picture, at the Scream Fest Awards.
And it's actually dedicated to Eli Roth.
Oh, well, we can...
Eli Roth said something very nice about the two, Jen and I forgot their names.
Soska sisters.
Jen and Sylvia Soska.
Yeah.
Who directed a film called Dead Hooker in a Trunk. So there you go.
I like these girls.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I like them already. All right. I think I'll be watching American
Mary.
Check
this one out. I think you'd like this.
No, I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah.
All right, tell me about Sightseers.
Sightseers is the latest film from Ben Wheatley, who did Down Terrace and a film called Kill List. Very, very popular with amongst the horror fans. And this one is about Australian woman, middle age, still kind of living at home, who decides she's going to, you know, sort of break away and just finally have just a weekend to herself. She meets this guy. They're going to just take a holiday together. And through the course of their holiday, things just start to go bad as the guy turns out to be, you know, kind of a serial killer in a way. He just starts knocking off people in the trailer parks and whatnot. She, you know, catches wind of it and be sort of, you know, joins in on the fun, if you will.
Uh-huh.
I was not a big fan of this movie. I saw this on the festival circuit. I think it was Toronto that I saw it at. I was also not a big fan of Kill List. A lot of people are really big fans of that movie.
I'm not a big fan of it either.
Yeah. This one's more, you know, cheeky in tone than Kill List. The violence isn't so overt to put people off. It's very tongue in cheek, very sort of be satiric in a way. But it just kind of wears out its welcome after a while, even though it's only like 87 minutes.
Okay. All right. And then the other one we've talked about that's available on demand and also in theaters. And Colin, have you seen Black Rock as well?
No, it played at our festival, and I watched another DVD skip around that night. So,
okay. All right. Well, we mentioned this one before a couple of times. I still have not seen it. But Eric, tell us about Black Rock. We've talked about this one already.
Yeah. Black Rock, it's a film. It was written by Mark Duplass, and it was directed by his wife, Katie Azleton, who did a film a few years ago called The Freebie. She's on the TV show The League. And this is a film about Katie Azleton also stars in the movie as one of a trio of old friends, women, also played by Kate Bosworth and Lake Bell. We're taking a holiday of themselves, and they're going to like this sort of this remote island where they buried a time capsule many years ago, and they're just going to hang out the way they used to, maybe mend some fences. Some things have gone bad over the years. And as they're there, they meet three guys, and the three guys, you know, they spend some time with them, and things get a little overly frisky with one of them, and next thing you know, they're running for their lives from these three guys who have guns. And they're chasing them down. Some people have basically tried to describe this as like a female deliverance in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a film that I wish was better. You know, you're watching it, and the premise is solid. It's nice to have, you know, women in control and be the aggressors at some point in a movie like this.
Yeah.
But it doesn't quite reach the levels of, obviously, a Deliverance, or you know, any number of films where you know the tables are turned in a situation like this,
like the Descent, even though that was, but that's
yeah, not, that's, yeah. That's another kind of good example. This one really didn't quite do it for me.
Okay, all right, that's Black Rock. It's out in theaters, but it's also available on demand if you'd like to see it. Boy, a lot of creepy stuff this week on demand.
Yeah,
jeez. Okay,
but American Mary, that's the one I really recommend.
American Mary. Okay,
check that one out.
I definitely will. There's no question about it. It looks like it's right up my alley.
Yeah.
Colin, what movies have you seen this week?
Iceman, Star Trek, and Stories We Tell.
Okay. All right. How about that? That's the same three I saw.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll jump into the movies. Colin Astuder from eFilmCritic.com, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com join us every Friday night for the Midnight Movie Reviews, and we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Midnight Movie Reviews continue coming up. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Tribune Tower. We are doing the Midnight Movie Reviews, and Eric and Colin are back. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, before we jump into the new movies, I do want to mention a couple of things, a couple of special screenings. The Patio, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but they're showing Jaws this weekend.
Yeah, it must be that.
Yeah, and it's going to be at Saturday night at 9:30 and Sunday at 5 p.m. So obviously,
They're also jumping to the other end of the Spielberg spectrum and showing Hook as well.
They're showing Hook?
Okay, yeah.
Well, at least they're showing Jaws.
Yeah.
So Saturday night at 9:30, if you've never seen Jaws on the big screen in a beautiful theater like The Patio, that's an awesome thing right there. And Sunday at 5. So we all highly recommend going to see Jaws at The Patio. I also wanted to mention for fans of Joss Whedon and the TV show Firefly, the landmark Century Center Cinema is the midnight show this weekend is Serenity.
Nice.
Which is a film that I actually really liked quite a bit and never really watched the series, but it's a good movie, and obviously everybody loves Joss Whedon now. And so Serenity is available, and it's interesting that they're doing that the same weekend that the J.J. Abrams Star Trek opens. So, and a Portage Theater, the Northwest Chicago Film Society, is presenting a screening of a truly bizarre movie from, I think, an incredibly gifted director, but a truly, truly bizarre piece of work that never manages to blow my mind in so many massive ways every time I see it. They're showing John Borman's Zardoz.
Oh, God.
Yeah, which is an incredibly strange film.
You're underselling it.
Yeah, Colin, have you seen Zardoz?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Well, you don't forget it when you see it. I can tell you that much. And I just, if anything, if you're interested in seeing Zardoz, just as a curiosity, and that's certainly what it is. The costume that they have Sean Connery wearing in this movie has just got to be seen to be believed.
Should just be called Cod.
Yeah. Very weird movie. So I don't know. I remember I saw it when I was a kid and I was so puzzled. I was like, what the hell is this? And I still feel that way, you know, like 40 years later in the movie, I'm like, huh? What? So anyway, if you're interested, those are some of the off the beaten path movies that are shown. But Jaws on the big screen at The Patio, that's your number one choice, I think, for those screenings. Sunday night at 5, tomorrow night at 9:30. So everybody hang on. Eric, Colin, we're going to take a quick break for the news. When we come back, we'll tell you all about the new movies in the theaters on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN live from the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. E! Film critics Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me every Friday night in the midnight hours to talk about movies, and that's what we're doing right now. Facebook.com/NickDShow. Stay connected, 312-981-7200, and Colin and Eric are back. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Colin, tell us about The Iceman.
All right. Well, this tells a true story of a very strange man, played by Michael Shannon, I suppose if I say it's played by Michael Shannon, it's a given that he's probably a strange guy that he's playing. Early in the film, he tells his soon-to-be wife on their first date, played by Winona Ryder, that he draws cartoons or he works for Disney, which is untrue. He actually dubs porno movies and works with the mob. And he eventually gets promoted to hitman and spends a couple decades in that profession and basically being the best at it, basically because he kind of just doesn't really have much of a conscience about it. And he successfully hides this from his wife and kids. During that time, Ray Liotta plays his boss, and Chris Evans plays another hitman who he eventually teams up with, and they, you know, store their bodies in meat lockers and such. And this alliance with this other hitman brings, you know, more strife to the workplace, and which eventually brings more strife at home. But this is a true story about this guy, this seemingly, you know, normal, albeit a bit stoic and odd, family man with a, you know, with a deep, dark secret. Kind of story we've seen before, and as such, it's pretty much okay. It doesn't really, you know, have much in the way of surprises, but the story is interesting enough to warrant, you know, the time spent watching it, and the movie pretty much coasts on that. It doesn't really have much to say about it. So I kind of wish the movie had more of a purpose. But I am recommending the movie mainly for Michael Shannon's performance, which is just one of the best of the year. It's an unsettling performance. It's an edgy performance. You're just constantly waiting for this guy to just eventually, you know, explode. And he disappears very deeply into this character. You know, it goes through a 20-year period. I think Winona Ryder and Ray Liotta are also really good. But this is clearly, you know, Michael Shannon's movie, and it's the reason to see it.
Okay. Eric, what do you think?
I'm a little less than Colin is on it. I'm not recommending it. Mainly, he used the word coasts. I think that's a pretty apt word to describe the film, which I found pretty generic. I've seen a number of crime films like this, and listening to Colin describe the plot of the movie, it's, I'm thinking there should be a lot more, you know, it should be a lot more interesting. It should, you know, either the approach to the movie is just very by the numbers. As for Michael Shannon's performance, you know, it's the kind of thing that you kind of expect out of Michael Shannon. You know, you don't really expect his performance in Premium Rush the way you do him in this movie. So, you know, yeah, he's fine. And I think, you know, that's the reason the film is even getting, you know, any kind of attention that it's getting is because of his involvement in it. I was actually more interested in David Schwimmer's performance as sort of a low-life mob enforcer guy.
Yeah.
I found his work to be far more fascinating than Shannon's. But yeah,
and the look of David Schwimmer in this movie,
yeah,
is just,
well, everyone's got really great porno mustache.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
In this movie,
fantastic yeah. Costumes, fantastic wigs.
I just never really felt anything. I was never felt really a sense of dread. Never really a sense of interest in this guy. You know, so okay, he killed a lot of people. Okay, we've seen guys who've killed a lot of people in mob stories like this before. And just wasn't buying it.
I'm more with Colin, Eric, because I think Michael Shannon is really great in this. But the criticisms that you both have about the screenplay are absolutely warranted. There's really not much here, and there's really nothing that we haven't seen before. And it's just like, you know, the basic premise is, okay, here's what we know about this guy. He's a stone cold killer. He's killed, you know, like over 100 people. And yet he's a devoted father and he's a good husband. That's kind of it. You know what I mean? There's not much more going on there. There are some, I think, some really interesting supporting roles. I'm glad you mentioned Schwimmer. I thought Schwimmer was really pretty hilarious in this. I thought Liotta was terrific. This is a part that Liotta's played 45,000 times. And it's, I don't know why I always like seeing Winona Ryder on screen. It always makes me feel good, you know? I like her. I've always liked Winona Ryder, and I like her in this. I think she does a good job. But this is Shannon's show all the way. I could watch Michael Shannon do anything. And I know that, you know, like a lot of people are saying his best performance this year was reading that sorority girl email, which is one of the greatest. Colin, have you seen that?
No.
The dramatic.
Funny or Die.
Oh, my God. Colin, you have to see it. Funny or Die. There was this real email sent out by this girl. It was a girl in a sorority, right? I can't remember.
Yeah, like the head of the sorority,
right.
Girl.
And he does a dramatic reading of it, and it's a real email from a real girl in a real sorority. And watching Michael Shannon read this is unbelievably funny. One of the funniest things I've seen all year. Sophia, I mean, I think we'll put a link up on our Facebook page for it. So put it up on our Facebook page if you want to see Michael Shannon read this dramatic
reading. Have you seen The Daily Show at all recently, and you've seen Stewart use a certain phrase with the word punt in it. It comes from this letter.
That's where it comes from. So you got to see it, Colin. Okay. It's great. It's going to be up on our Facebook page. Check it out during a break. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. But no, I'm recommending this movie. It absolutely doesn't even remotely come close to breaking any kind of ground, new or old. but I enjoyed watching some of the performances, and I thought Shannon was great. And I watch. It's abundantly clear that I will watch Michael Shannon do anything. And you know, the more that I see Michael Shannon, and the more movies that he does, one, I think he's awesome. Two, I couldn't be more proud of the fact of that he's from Chicago and he comes back here and he's still a member at Red Orchid and he comes back to Chicago and does shows for a 60-seat house. This is a guy who's been, you know, nominated for Academy Awards. He's one of the hottest actors in the world right now. He's about to play Zod, for God's sake, and that's gonna change the trajectory of his career. Huge, I think. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens. But I love the guy. I think he's great, and I think Shannon's terrific at it. So the one reason that I'm recommending The Iceman is because of Michael Shannon. So there you go. All right. Let's see. Eric, why don't you tell us about Scatter My Ashes at Bergdorf's?
Okay. Well, this is a documentary about the famous Manhattan sort of superstore. It goes through not so much the history. It has a little bit of history to it, kind of literally scattered throughout the movie. But it's really kind of a self-congratulatory piece with a lot of celebrities who shop there and a lot of designers who, you know, have their stuff there and people who have worked at the store for years and tell you about, you know, how great it is and what it means to the world of fashion and shopping and whatnot. It's a documentary, I think, very much for rich people. In a way, I think rich people will enjoy this a lot more, the fashionistas for sure. To me, it was like watching a documentary version of Mannequin.
What?
Yeah, you heard me. Just without the Kim Cattrall stuff. But, you know, that's what it felt like to me. Very repetitive. Like I said, you don't really learn a whole lot about the real history of Bergdorf's other than, you know, like, ooh, Cher used to shop there and stuff like that. Like, okay, wonderful. It didn't really ring true. And again, I'm not maybe the person to be reviewing a movie like this.
Yeah, I'm assuming you're not the target audience for this movie.
I am not. So maybe they will enjoy it more the same way they would enjoy going to a fashion show, mm-hmm. which I also would not enjoy going to. But if that, you know, you want to see, you know, 90 minutes of people talking very, very wonderfully about this very expensive store, this is the movie for you.
Okay. Well, there you go. I've read about this, and now after your review, I have no interest at all in seeing this movie. Not one iota of interest to sit through this thing. All right, and by the way, it's exclusively playing at the 600 North Michigan.
There you go.
They must have felt very strongly about it.
Yeah.
So it's just playing. You got to come downtown. I would recommend skipping the movie and eating at Heaven on 7 if you're going to do that.
I agree.
Totally. There you go. Okay, guys.
It opens today and closes tomorrow is basically what you're saying.
Pretty much, yeah. So it's at 600 North Michigan if you want to go see rich people talk about a really fancy store. That sounds so bad to me. All right. Eric, hang on. And Colin, hang on. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we will review more of the new movies right here on WGN. It's the Midnight Movie Reviews. Colin and Eric and me and you at 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Midnight Movie Reviews is what we're talking about here. Eric and Colin from eFilmCritic.com always join me. You can join us too, 312-981-7200. If you saw any of the new movies and you have comments or questions or reviews of your own, 312-981-7200. You can also check us out at Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Colin and Eric, we are back. Okay, Colin, why don't you tell us about Star Trek Into Darkness?
Alrighty, well, this is the second in the reboot series that started in 2009. It starts with a mission that goes horribly wrong, and one that seems to cost Kirk and his, his command and his crew to be dispersed throughout the Federation because of a mistake he made. But Kirk convinces the higher-ups to give him back his ship so we can find out who's behind some terrorist attacks on the Federation. And it turns out the terrorist is a guy who was played by Benedict Cumberbatch of Sherlock Holmes. And he's kind of a steely-eyed baritone guy who's never quite what he seems to be. They locate him on a Klingon planet, and the plot involves, deadly torpedoes that have a sort of a personal connection with this terrorist. So this is a plot that sort of, mirrors contemporary events, as many have pointed out, not in a heavy-handed sort of way, but, you still have all the iconic characters from Star Trek that we all know and love, and they all get to do their thing. So I've never really been a Star Trek fan. I like some of the movies, and I think I've, only seen one full episode of the TV show. It happened to be the Tribble episode that everybody loves.
Yep.
And that's it. So I should make that clear that I don't really care what they do with the lineage or the timeline or the continuity or the canon of Star Trek. I don't really care. Do whatever you want. Just make a thoughtful, entertaining movie where I'm not completely lost because I didn't do my homework, and I'll be happy. And I certainly don't have time to go back and watch that first Star Trek again and play catch up because I can't remember a single thing from that movie.
Neither can I.
Yeah. All I remember was wondering why Tyler Perry and Winona Ryder were in it. So that's where I'm coming from. I don't care. And that's a pretty nice place to be because I enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed it more than the first one, probably because it wasn't spending so much time establishing characters that, we already know. And pretty much just, it hits the ground running. The interplay between the characters is fun and involving, and the action scenes I thought were pretty solid. It's familiar stuff in terms of the storyline. It's okay. I get, because I think it's a pretty well-made movie. Chris Pine as Shatner.
As Shatner.
As Kirk. Great. Yeah. Didn't bother me this time as much as he did in the last one. So, on purely basic terms, I'm recommending this movie just as an enjoyable piece of summertime entertainment. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm sure the Star Trek fans have a lot of issues with it. I am recommending it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll find out what Eric and I think of the new Star Trek movie after the news. We'll take a quick break, and we got more of that coming up. And we want to hear from you. If you saw the new Star Trek movie and you want to jump in here with your comments, if you're a Star Trek fan or if you're a Trekker or a Trekkie, whatever the hell they call them, you can call us at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also send your text to 24720, and you can check us out on Twitter and at facebook.com/NickDShow. facebook.com/NickDShow. All right, the Midnight Movie Reviews will continue after the 1 o'clock news. I'll give you my review, and Eric will give you his review of the new Star Trek movie, and we also have Sarah Polley's new documentary, Stories We Tell, to review after the news. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. We're here till 2 a.m. tonight. We've got Straight Out of Context, Drunks in the News, and Nick D Show Spies all coming up. Drunks in the News, of course, is brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, Gale Street Inn. Had a lovely Mother's Day dinner there. My thanks to George and everybody over there. Outstanding stuff. And so we will give away some Gale Street Inn gift certificates a little bit later on as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We welcome back Eric and Colin. Colin told us about Star Trek Into Darkness, the new Star Trek film, and Colin enjoyed it. So, Eric, where do you stand on Star Trek Into Darkness?
Well, this is a film that I came very close to recommending. To put it in terms that Star Trek fans can understand, it's basically a $185 million reimagining of a very specific original Star Trek episode. I think they do some interesting things with that. I think Colin is absolutely right that because you don't have the film doesn't need to waste all the time setting, establishing all the characters, we can basically sort of jump right into the story and give a lot of these characters some better face movie, particularly Simon Pegg, Scotty. That being said, while the film is very well paced and I do like it better than the first one, the film makes a couple of really incredibly tragic flaws down the stretch. One of them involves a completely unnecessary cameo appearance that adds nothing. In fact, actually, kind of should insult the intelligence of any self-respecting Star Trek fan. And then they triple down on insulting that intelligence during something that happens in the final act of this movie. The studio and Abrams have been very careful not to give away too much about this film, and I wouldn't dream of doing that on the air here. But, you know, I mean, in some ways the secret's, you know, the one big secret is out by now, and it's not too hard to say that I think the filmmakers and the screenwriters were really trying to, you know, really make their own personal second entry into their own Star Trek series mirror what we saw the first time around with the Shatner crew.
That's absolutely right. Yep.
Yeah, and that is a tragic flaw. Because for one thing, this whole, in the first film, which I actually did rewatch and does not hold up as it didn't the first time I saw it, where J.J. Abrams and the writers, they created this alternate timeline, which basically gave them carte blanche to essentially, you know, detach themselves from the old Star Trek series. And it's a cheap ploy, but it's an effective one if they're consistent in what they're doing by just, you know, making it their own.
You know, J.J. Abrams is a little too obsessed with alternate timelines.
He certainly is.
I mean, for God's sake, he did it on Felicity.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, listen to this. He was now. I'm not going to blame him for that, because they originally, I think they ordered 12 episodes.
Yeah.
For Felicity, and then after he'd finished it, you know, written it, and that 12th episode of the final season wrapped everything up, they said we need four more. So he had her go back in time. They had a different. It was unbelievable. So the 16 episodes of the final series, the final season of Felicity, was a time travel thing. The last four episodes. So I mean, he even did it on Felicity as a gimmick.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, I it's a cheap device, but I think it would be an effective one if they had stuck to it. And the reason they don't stick to it in the first one is because they bring in old Spock.
Right.
Okay, which is where the first film always fell apart for me.
Mm-hmm.
And here they're making really no bones about it, that there is a definitive connection to the Shatner series.
Yeah.
This film even begins with a life or death decision that Spock makes, which I thought, you know, I'm like, okay, well, they're just kind of doing a bookend between this and Wrath of Khan. Like, this is going to pay off many years down the road when Spock has to make that same decision again. The way what's handled in the final act of this movie is so, and I used this word the first time around with the first Star Trek movie, unforgivable. That the characters involved do not know each other the way they do in the other movie. There's a technique that we are well aware of that completely cheapens the idea behind what one of the characters does. So there's less danger involved in the finality of it. I was really sort of shaken to the core angrily by the last third of this movie, so much so that I was actually throwing up last night, and I think the movie had something to do with that. I'm blaming Star Trek Into Darkness for my throwing up last night.
Okay.
But if you're a Star Trek fan, you know, you could do a lot worse. But I think any self-respecting Star Trek fan should be angry at this movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not a big like Colin. I'm not a big Star Trek guy. I was under the famous theory in the original series of movies on the even numbered ones. I stand by that. I really do. I think all the even numbered Star Treks in the original series are really good. As far as the Next Generation movies go, the only one I really liked was the one, I don't even know what the hell it's called, with the Borg in it.
First Contact.
That's the only one I liked. Oh, Nemesis had some moments. I didn't like the J.J. Abrams reboot from 4 years ago. I was completely underwhelmed with it. I didn't care about it, and I had no interest whatsoever in it. So I'm a little bit more of a Star Trek fan than you are, Colin, because I did watch the series when I was a kid. But I am certainly not a Trekkie or a Trekker or whatever the hell they're called, and I'm certainly not one of these guys who knows every detail of what's going on in the world of Star Trek. So what they do here, where they play with the timelines, as Eric said, I can totally understand why Star Trek fans would be pissed off about that, in the same way that I can understand why Iron Man comic book fans would be pissed off by what they did in Iron Man. And oddly, both of these big summer action sci-fi movies take on terrorism in an interesting kind of way. This one, I think, more seriously than in what they do with Iron Man, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and when you mentioned the cameo, Eric, I was like, what?
Yeah.
I think this is better than the 2009 reboot. I think the action sequences are better handled. I think I like the fact, like you guys have mentioned, that it comes right out of the gate running, you know? And I like the fact that some of the characters that didn't really get to do a lot in the first movie because of the fact that it was an origin film get to do some really fun stuff in this. There are moments in it that I really liked. I think that the Sherlock Holmes, Cumberbun, is actually quite good in this. I think it's just shy of being a campy performance. But I think he's good in it. I don't like where it went. I'm with you, Eric. I don't like where it went in the final third. I didn't get quite as angry enough to vomit, but but I absolutely disliked where it went. Overall, I'm not recommending this. I just don't like what J.J. Abrams has done, you know, to the reboot. I didn't like the first one. This one's better, but I'm still not. I still don't think it's worth seeing. And it's certainly. Listen, you know, I did not see it in the 3D or any of that stuff.
Me neither. Don't need to.
No, absolutely not. And this is this is one of the strongest examples of getting ripped off for your 3D money and yeah. I mean, this wasn't shot in 3D.
No,
it wasn't shot in 3D, and it wasn't
If you want lens flares coming at you, then it's worth it. But yeah. That's about it.
Yeah. I don't think it makes a difference whatsoever. Now, this also wasn't shot in IMAX, was it? But they're showing it in IMAX.
Right. Right.
So
I had the option. It was a Wednesday night after a screening in Barrington. I had the option to see like an 11 p.m. screen of Star Trek, and I went to the box office and I'm like, "How much is it for Star Trek?" And they told me $16.25.
Man, oh man.
$16.25, wow. And I said, "No, thank you. I'm going to go to a matinee tomorrow and pay $6."
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, man. You're dropping $16.25 to see this movie.
Yeah.
And it's fake IMAX and it's fake 3D. It's not even shot in those formats.
Right.
So, man, oh, man, oh, man. The studios are really cleaning up on this 3D thing, man. It's just, it's ridiculous. So, I don't know. If you're a Star Trek fan, you're required to see it. It just underwhelmed me, just like the first one. A little bit better than the first one, but still, I'm not recommending it. So, all right, there you go. Star Trek Into Darkness. Although, I must say, it's getting good reviews.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
Yeah,
I think any self-respecting Star Trek fan should be really pissed off at this movie.
Okay. All right. Well, hang on. Well, look, man, we can talk about a movie.
Yes.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Sarah Polley's new documentary, Stories We Tell. And there's, you know, there's no mystery here. It's awesome. So we will tell you all about it coming up after the break here. Stories We Tell from Sarah Polley. That's next on the Midnight Movie Reviews. WGN-TV Morning News is Chicago's must-watch morning news. Monday's must-watch, Vin Diesel, baby, talks about Fast and Furious. Yeah! Yeah, man! I can't even explain to you how excited I am about that movie. Okay, so Vin Diesel's going to talk about Fast and Furious 6. Nick DiGilio here on the Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. Midnight movie reviews, we do them all. We cover them all. If you miss us on Friday nights, you know, the full-length podcasts are back, and you can get them almost immediately. You can go to WGNradio.com to get them. The full-length podcasts are back. You can hear every single second of the show if you missed any of the movie reviews. We like to be very thorough on Friday night on the Midnight Movie Reviews, tell you all about the on-demand options and all about the theatrical options, and give you a preview and what you want to check out when you're making your plans for the week and the weekend. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we welcome Colin and Eric back. All right, welcome, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, Eric, tell us about Stories We Tell.
Okay. Really quick before we get into that, I just do need to correct something. Apparently, Abrams did shoot some of the movie in IMAX.
Oh, okay.
He did shoot portions of it, so I'll clear that up.
Okay. Well, I didn't see it in IMAX, so I don't know.
Right. Well, you shouldn't. but now let's talk about a real movie.
All right.
Okay. Stories We Tell is the latest film from Sarah Polley, the actress turned wonderful filmmaker, made Away From Her and Take This Waltz, which I think we talked about every week last year on the show. and this film is a documentary, and her subject is her family. She turns the camera not just on herself, but on her family to basically sort of recount and tell the story about their mother, Diane Polley, who... back in the day was an actress herself, did a lot of theater in New York, and was one of these women at the time, married Sarah's father, and was sort of looking for something a little bit more in her life, that she wasn't quite ready to sort of become play the mom role, so sort of be the domesticated housewife at the time. And really, you know, was really happy, you know, happiest when she was acting and being a part on the stage. And her father was an actor and I think, was he a writer as well?
Yeah.
Her father, yeah. So he wrote stuff and they worked on stuff together as well. In fact, that's where they met. And then so the film, you know, recounts, you know, this story and all of the various siblings and the recollections of their time with their mother. And then a bombshell is dropped within the picture and spins the story off in a direction that makes it more than just some filmmaker who wants to tell, you know, put her story of her family on screen for everyone to see. In fact, one of her siblings early in the movie says, why does anyone care about our family? Why would anyone be interested in this movie? And I'll tell you why. For one, it's a tremendous story. It's an absolutely tremendous story from front to back. The less you know about it going in, the better to sort of let these revelations sort of wash over you, because they also the way that Sarah explores the stuff in the movie, it also sort of makes you start to sort of question your own, you know, sort of, you know, your existence and your sort of place amongst family and your personal identity. And stuff like that. And that's only the second act of the movie, where this film really takes a turn into, like, true documentary masterpiece territory, is in the third act, where even more revelations come to life, not the least of which is the way that Sarah is telling the story, with the various flashbacks and devices that she's using. But the film becomes this idea about, you know, how stories can change the world, and how, you know, the minute you tell an amusing anecdote about somebody in the positive, that person immediately has a different respect or appreciation of that person, that, you know, what that person's all about. And then, you know, if that spreads and that spreads, you know, they tell two people, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a film necessarily about the world of gossip, but it's you can look at it in that respect. And by the end of this movie, you're really sort of taken for a loop. It has one of the best final lines of any movie you're going to see all year. And it really is a true masterpiece of a documentary that we were so honored to have as the opening night film of the Chicago Critics Film Festival last month, with Sarah in attendance. And she could not be more lovely. She is absolutely the real deal, just as a person. And clearly as a filmmaker, she's really one of the most accomplished and one of the best working today.
Yeah. Colin, go ahead.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the very best movies of the year. And, you know, it's also a great mystery. I mean, that's kind of what it ultimately turns into. Not ultimately, but I mean, it's one of the things it turns into, as you kind of just watching the story unfold. And just like Eric said, you know, as she's uncovering these layers of her family, she uncovers layers within the narrative itself. And, you know, like Eric said, we start to think about stories and, you know, that we have to tell, and how those, you know, the receiver of those stories, creates ideas and images that get handed down almost like a game of telephone. Those stories kind of take on a life of their own. And she uses, to exemplify this, she uses not just real footage of her family, but she employs a technique that, you know, usually is pretty, is not one that we're all in favor of, sort of like reenactments, that they're so seamless that you won't even be thinking about it. You might even be convinced it's real, and you're not even sure what's real and what's not. I certainly wasn't sure. All around, it's a pretty brave piece of filmmaking, that has a lot to say about storytelling and documentary filmmaking, and I can't wait to revisit it.
All right, you guys, hang on. We got the news, and I'll give you my thoughts on it. This is Stories We Tell, Sarah Polley's new film, which is playing at the Landmark Century Center Cinema here in Chicago, and we'll tell you more about it. I'll give you my review. Colin and Eric both loved it, and we'll tell you more about it coming up. If you have a comment, 312-981-7200. News is next. Wrapping up the movie reviews, we gave you a complete rundown of all the movies that you can watch in the comfort of your own home on demand, and all the theatrical releases, including Star Trek Into Darkness. You can check it all out if you missed it. Go to the full-length podcasts. They're all available now. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower here on WGN, and Eric and Colin. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, so Eric and Colin both reviewed Stories We Tell, and both, you know, say it's one of the best films of the year, and I don't mean to sound redundant, but it is. It is absolutely one of the best films of the year, and I think it might be the best movie she's directed so far. That Sarah Polley's made so far, and I've really loved all three of her films. She has become an extraordinary filmmaker, and to watch the arc of her career and how it's gone and changed from like Back to the Sweet Hereafter, and to see all the things that she's done since then and accomplished and become this amazing filmmaker. The thing about this movie that I found so stunning, I echo everything that you guys have said, but this is a really remarkably brave movie in every way possible. It's very revealing, and like, you know, it's just I felt like, you know, like an observer watching this family and not believing that Sarah Polley would allow such a personal story to be told. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I just was I was stunned at the honesty and what she shared about her life. Many things that you know could be remain just very, very private, and not do it in a pretentious or self-indulgent way, because this movie could have easily been very self-indulgent. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And just the, you know, the way that the story unfolds and what it becomes and the revelations that happen throughout the entire running time of the film, I not only did I admire her as a filmmaker here, because she's made an extraordinary documentary here. I mean, there's no question about it. But I admired her as a person. Do you know what I mean? Just by letting this be told.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's an incredibly brave piece of work. It's beautifully told. I was moved by it. I was fascinated by it. I found it suspenseful at times. And again, the reenactments mixed with the actual like 8mm film and stuff like that, that all worked for me. And normally it pulls me out of the movie, but it worked here. I just think this is a stunning piece of work, and it goes beyond. The film ultimately goes beyond, and you guys both said this, it goes beyond just telling the story of this one family and becomes about so much more. It's just a remarkable piece of work, and it's absolutely one of the best movies of the year. And if you're going to go to the Landmark Century Center Cinema, you're going to have a good choice to make, because you got a lot of good movies playing there right now, including Mud. And Mud opened wide, by the way, and is now is playing everywhere, including if you're a Lincoln Square person, it's playing at the Davis. So, I mean, there's some great movies out there. I'm the biggest fan out of the three of us of the movie Disconnect. But these are great films, and this is absolutely, without question, one of the best movies of the year, we tell.
And it's only playing at the Landmark Center. That's kind of a tragic thing. It's only playing at that theater.
Maybe it'll open a little bit wider. You know what I mean? My guess is that this thing is going to do gangbusters at Landmark. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, just continue to spread the word on, you know, films like this. You know, we can certainly beat the drum every week, as far as I'm concerned, as long as this film is playing. Because, I mean, seriously, everyone asks me for recommendations all the time, and right now all I've been saying for, like, weeks, all I've been saying is Mud.
Yeah.
And now I can say Stories We Tell.
Right.
Like, these are the only two films I really, really recommend in theaters right now.
Oh, they're the two best movies out right now. There's no question about it. And I'm a big fan of Disconnect. I know not a lot of people.
That's good, too.
But Mud and Stories We Tell will end up on my top 10 list at the end of the year, and I know that.
There you go.
I'm predicting that, and I really think that's a very, very strong possibility. Some great stuff. So Stories We Tell, playing only at the Landmark Century Center Cinema, which is at Diversey and Clark in Chicago. It's absolutely worth the trip coming in. It is just a remarkable and brave and revealing piece of work by an incredibly gifted woman. So, I mean, jeez.
Yeah.
So I'm so impressed with Sarah Polley. And I loved her as an actress, too. And, you know, I still do. And now she's just become a formidable filmmaker. And I can't wait to see what she does next. I mean, you know, she's unbelievable. So Stories We Tell at the Landmark Century Center Cinema. Go see it at the Clark corner of Clark and Diversey in Chicago. It's absolutely worth it. Stories We Tell. And if you can't come into town, Mud is playing. It's the other great film that's out right now. Mud is playing in suburbs and in other places. So check that out, too. Matthew McConaughey in that Jeff Nichols film. And it's this kid, Ty Sheridan, who gives, I think, one of the best child performances I've ever seen. So great stuff out there. You just got to look for it. So Stories We Tell at the Landmark. Check it out. All right, what do we got? No, God, next week we got The Hangover, don't we?
We have Hangover Part 3.
Mm.
We have Epic. We have Furious 6.
Yeah, baby!
That's how the title is in the movie, Furious 6.
Oh, it is?
Not Fast and, it's just Furious 6.
Oh, because the last movie wasn't Furious. This one's not Fast
5.
Yeah, it was Fast 5.
So it's Fast 5, now it's Furious 6.
That's what it says on the titles.
Yeah. Even though it's technically 8 of them.
Why are they?
Because these movies are dumb, Dick.
I know, but I love
them. Dumb.
I love them.
I know you do.
I can't wait.
Most importantly, though, next week we have the return of Arrested Development.
That's true. Return of Arrested Development next the 26th.
And the Liberace movie.
And the Liberace movie is next weekend, too.
Same night. same day as
yes. All right. DVR is going to have smoke porn out of the back of it.
Yep.
So there you go. All right, you guys. Thanks a lot, and keep pushing Stories We Tell in Mud. People need to see these movies.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, guys. Yep. Take care. Okay. Colin and Eric, bye. We bye. Thank you guys, and we'll talk to you next week for the Midnight Movie Reviews. Yeah, really, seriously. Stories We Tell. Remarkable film from director Sarah Polley. And Mud from Jeff Nichols with Matthew McConaughey. For my money, two of the best movies of the year. Mud is my favorite film of the year so far. But Stories We Tell, remarkable piece of work, and really, you guys should check it out.